It's Monday.
It's November 18th.
And the word of the day is recrudescence, which means the return of something terrible after a time of reprieve. Used in a sentence, now we fight the fuck back and time is of the recrudescence.
Or the speed at which terrible things will happen. I think we can call it zip recruiter.
I don't know. It worked better on paper, guys.
No, it looks great. It looks great. I'm no illusions.
I'm Cecil something Italian.
I'm Heath Enright, and broadcasting delayed from America's Lair de la Resistance, we are the Skeptocrats.
On this week's episode, all joy and hope and thoughts of a better future are sucked out of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Democrats embrace states' rights.
They sure do. And Donald Trump offers a no-bid contract to Elon Musk and Swamp Fillers LLC or some shit.
But no. First, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight are my fellow skeptic rats, No Illusions, and Cecil something Italian. Gentlemen, you want to start off with some noises before we get into the words part?
Yeah,
what do you want to do?
Just warming it up. Like, honestly, the biggest challenge of the post-election version of my job, other than scraping myself out of bed every day, is that sure, I had to learn to spell.
I think you nailed it. That's how I would have pronounced it.
I didn't realize it had that many H's. Yeah.
See, so okay. I added this to my personal dictionary afterwards. It underlined it, and I'm like, no, you know what? I'm going to need that one for
that
the next
stays
4 years.
In. Yeah. That stays in.
My personal dictionary was like, oh, that's a word.
That's the
word.
Post-election noise, isn't it? Yeah.
It's November 24. That's
enough people have used it on Google Docs now that it's like, no, I get it.
As a Midwesterner, I'm going to try to do my best Tim Walz here. So here we go.
Okay.
Oofta.
Okay, but his hot dish is really good. Yeah.
Sure.
All right, here we go. In our lead story tonight, America failed. Mm-hmm. We took the easiest test in the history of tests, and we failed. It was multiple choice with two choices that could possibly win. More than half the voters chose an evil, crazy person. Another 2% or so don't know how multiple choice works, apparently. Mm-hmm. Yep. And about 35% of people who were eligible to vote did nothing instead of something. And here we are. So first big lesson for me is we're even dumber as a country than we already thought. I'm pretty sure everyone listening was already placing that stupidity bar like somewhere in the inner core. And then on election day, the country was like, here, hold my beer. And they dove into a molten ball of iron and nickel.
You're right.
And swam below a metaphorical bar to make a point. Many of them smiling as they did it. So that's what I learned.
Yeah. Well, now the most important thing that I learned, as near as I could tell from social media, is that everybody was right. And this outcome perfectly vindicated everything everyone ever said.
I just want to just thank the media. I'm glad we softened stupid to low information, because that's going to be really beneficial moving forward,
nice of us.
I think.
Yeah,
it's nice.
It's good stuff. Speaking of which, one of my favorite things to do at a time like this is blame the idiots who fucked it up. So blame the low information. Yeah. But I think all the intelligent people listening already know who that is. And I want to focus on other things right now, starting with who we should not be blaming. There's a right way to lose and a wrong way to lose, and I'm seeing lots of the wrong way. Mm-hmm. For example, we should not be blaming any particular demographic as a whole, other than white people. We're terrible.
Okay, yeah.
But I've already seen way too much other group level blaming. We saw Trump make some big gains with Latino voters this year, but nobody should be blaming the group as a whole. That's terrible. We need to stop treating any group as a monolith, because that's clearly wrong. And from a tactical standpoint, it definitely lost us votes.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's amazing how many purported lefties had to be reminded the answer isn't racism in the wake of this whole thing. But yeah.
Yep. So true, man.
Seems
Holy
like
shit.
That wouldn't be necessary, but it is. I'm also not going to be blaming Kamala Harris. I think she ran a great campaign that injected a ton of new energy, and she only had 100 days to do it. And Tim Walz was an excellent running mate. If there's any valid blame, I'd say it's for Joe Biden for not acting sooner to step aside.
Yes.
I'm a big Joe Biden fan, but I think there's some blame there. Obviously, it's much easier to say that in retrospect.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking back to when he first got elected, and there was the unspoken but heavily implied and heavily understood plan to step aside after one term. That plan just quietly went away. Again, given the retrospect, I can imagine a better scenario if there's a full primary and plenty of time for the winner to run a standard campaign. That being said, I'd guess that Kamala Harris would have won that primary and then still lost the general, knowing what we know now. And same for anyone else that might have won that primary. So what are you guys thinking about that? Would that have changed the outcome in the general for Kamala Harris or for a different primary winner?
I don't think so. Like, look, I do feel like panic switching candidates without a democratic process is probably a mistake. But the only real solution with, when Biden didn't step aside at the end of one term, would have been a robust primary against him. And I don't think anybody outside the RFK Jr. camp was calling for that at the time. So I don't know. I don't think there is actually a lot of fault to assign on the left in terms of how we wound up here.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you too, Heath. I don't know that there would have been a difference, even if there was, you know, a primary. Mm-hmm. I think there is a little bit of blame on Biden for not dropping out sooner, especially this week. Some people close to him were saying that he was losing, you know, this is before the first debate, right? He was losing to Trump, and Trump was probably capturing 400 electoral votes.
Yeah, and that was internally known to them, right?
And that, to me, says you should have planned a retirement party a little sooner. And and it's not like people didn't know Joe was unpopular. He was unpopular, especially with low information voters. He was very unpopular with those
idiots.
People.
I'm switching it back.
We softened our language, people, for two paragraphs.
It was a rough two paragraphs,
it
man.
It was. It's hard to say. It's hard to say.
Right. To be clear, I think Biden's been a pretty great president, so the unpopularity didn't really make sense. But most importantly, regarding the retrospect, if the Yankees had pulled Aaron Judge out of center field in Game 5 of the World Series, he wouldn't have made the first of five errors that led to five unearned runs in an insane, ridiculous comeback win for the Dodgers. But, okay, that's not very useful to think about, even though I do that, like, every day. So, moving on to another example of bad blaming that I've seen. Nobody should be blaming the wokes. First of all, that's us, like talking right now and listening right now, probably. And we will not accept blame. We are liberal elites. Elites, I say. But more importantly, we're correct.
Yep.
Pretty much everything that might be described as the woke agenda by assholes is just basic morality.
Yeah.
The fact that lots of low information Americans aren't motivated by basic morality doesn't mean we should stop fighting for social justice. That would be a terrible idea. We just need to find a simple message that wins, also, in my opinion. The overall platform should stay woke, but the message includes way more direct discussion about economic justice than we got this year. That's what I want to see. And then we do good fascism once we win. Because there's no more rules. We're not doing rules anymore. Whatever you want to do, pack the court. Time out on Congress. White men can't vote. Executive order. Time in. There you go. Like, whatever works. Fascism is great when you win.
Okay,
we just lost.
No, look, I think the most noteworthy failure we made, like our whole side made, was that we made a shit case for our vision. Right? Like, now, granted, a lot of us never got further in the vision than not Donald Trump, and that feels like it should be enough. But the fact
you shouldn't have to get much further than that, but yeah.
Right,
for
but
sure.
But the fact that we weren't making a better affirmative case for what Biden had done and what Harris was doing and planned to do, and the fact they didn't either.
Yeah, right.
Right. Biden and Harris didn't either. That seems like the biggest own goal of the election to me.
Yeah. I think we should start letting people know that many of the woke policies that are out there, they're also great economically for a majority of Americans.
Sure.
People actually do vote for their own benefit. And we saw this in states where people still voted red.
you know, probably led on by the economy, thinking it would be better. It won't, by the way, mm-hmm. people in those red states, it won't be better. And they still, look, they still voted for abortion access.
Sure.
Missouri yep. passed the right to abortion, a $13.25 an hour minimum wage, but they also banned ranked choice voting, and they elected Josh Hawley by 14 fucking points, man.
Yeah. They bumped the minimum wage with a 58% approval on that vote, yes. I think, something like that.
Yeah,
in Missouri.
It's huge.
Yeah, yeah, and if Florida was still doing majority rules, they'd have legalized marijuana and protected abortion rights as well.
Protected abortion as well, but that's 60%.
Yeah, they're not
down
doing
there.
Democracy.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Exactly, no. Okay, so here we are. We live in a stupid, low-information country. What's next? How do we win next time? Well, we need a strategy, I think, that's better calibrated with our stupid reality. And that strategy is we trick them. We learned just how stupid we are as a country, but okay, there's a little bit of weird good news in there. The stupidity means that tricking people is even easier than we thought. The Trump campaign was able to do it with very obvious lies about economic populism. So for me, the move going forward is a very simple message of truth about economic populism. That's a message that should unite 90-something percent of us. This is what people like Liz Warren and AOC and Bernie Sanders have been saying the whole time. After the election, in fact, Bernie put out a statement that basically said, like, well, maybe we focus up, like I've been saying this whole fucking time. He got some support for that, but also some criticism, especially regarding a follow-up statement that he made regarding identity politics. And it sounded like he was saying we should abandon social justice issues. But I think a more generous reading of Bernie there would be, let's distill the main message and focus way more on economic justice for working class people. And he did clarify the original statement during an interview last week, saying that we need to do both. His point being, the support for working class people in the message was definitely lacking this year. And I think he's right about that. I think adopting a message that has a much bigger emphasis on direct economic justice is the best strategy moving forward.
I don't know. You know, this is what we said in 2016 when we lost the blue wall. I think we're being awfully generous to say that the American voter chose Trump because they're stupid enough to believe his message of economic populism. Right. Like the main or low information enough. I'm sorry, Cecil.
I was going to come in. Thank you, Noah.
Yeah. No, but look, the main message of his campaign from where I was sitting was, I hate immigrants and trans people. And I think that's what Americans voted for. I don't think economic populism can counteract that.
I think the trans issue that I saw was couched in economics, though. It targeted both trans and immigrant populations, and it was about the group getting taxpayer surgery.
Yeah.
You know, that immigrant thing, you know, the immigrant thing, though, that story is as old as the country, and it's a great way to rile up a base.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, they accused the Irish of eating dogs as well.
At a certain point.
But the Imani Khalif ad, right, where they were like under a Kamala Harris, men are beating up women. That had nothing to do with trans taxpayer surgeries or whatever. That was just hate.
I will concede that for sure. But the one I saw was the Charlemagne the God one.
They showed a bunch of those. But like I said, I think any like when your slogan is, you know, she's for they them, I'm for us, or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to say that like yes, they did couch a lot of that in economic stuff, but it was just a means of getting the hate out there, I thought.
I'll agree. Yeah.
Tons of hate. So yeah, I think the American voter needs to be broken down a little bit more than just saying the American voter, though. So
sure,
a big chunk is just hate. Absolutely. And in fact, like right now, you two guys, a lot of people listening might be saying, hold on, Heath, didn't we also learn that a bunch of people in that 90-something percent you were talking about are raging bigots and they refuse to vote for a woman or a person of color or, God forbid, both, and having like multiple races? It doesn't even make sense. And yes, that's true. Anyone who's claiming that racism and misogyny weren't big factors is full of shit. There's a big chunk that's not reachable. But if we ascribe all of the Trump support to bigotry, we end up with a plan that involves running nothing but white guys at the top of the ticket, which I do not like. Mm-hmm. Also worth noting, Trump saw gains this year among women and among non-white voters compared to 4 years ago. And I have to assume some of those people are not raging bigots. They just got tricked about the economy and they voted for economic change in some like vague granted, very much misunderstood way that they're wrong about.
I'm not trying to be a contrarian here, but I have a hard time believing anybody who voted for Trump isn't a raging bigot, right? Like, I almost have to question what the term raging bigot means if we start believing that.
I think it might be a mistake to presume everyone is as plugged into what Trump says as, you know, many of the people who are news junkies
mm-hmm.
are.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I feel like that feels unfair to low information people.
Well, yeah, that's like 80% of the country, people who barely consume any political news or zero, like if any.
Sure, sure, right. But there is still a wide gulf between news junkie and not realizing Trump is a bigot.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
You're right there. You are.
Huge,
right there,
huge gap. Yeah. I'm saying there's some people in that gap. People who like, there. We know there's people who voted for Obama and then Trump. It sounds
yeah.
insane.
No, I know.
But
yeah. You're
those
right.
are real people. But I definitely understand the instinct to reject any kind of cooperation with somebody who voted for Donald Trump anytime ever. That's reasonable. I get it. You're supposed to be liberal and elite. That's what you're supposed to do. The alternative would be conservative and shitty or centrist and meh at best. But the reality is, and I feel like all my thoughts this week are starting with angrily saying the reality is, but that is how it needs to work. The reality is, if that phrase doesn't fit before your thought, you got to start over. Another reality is that most people are not highly educated and politically informed. And in order to win in the future, assuming democracy is still a thing at that point, we need to have a decent amount of less educated, less informed people inside the tent. That's been the backbone of our coalition since FDR. And getting back that winning coalition is much more achievable than it seems right now. So maybe a little bit of good news and the bad news. Lots of headlines are talking about a landslide victory for Trump and a grand realignment of American politics. But it turns out headlines aren't extremely nuanced. It was a lot closer than that.
Mm-hmm.
We needed about 750,000 voters in seven swing states, and Donald Trump would have lost the electoral vote. So we're talking about pulling back a relatively small chunk compared to like the whole country. A good amount of those voters, I think, are working class people who probably felt like they couldn't afford to vote based on anything other than getting by in a difficult economy. And they don't know enough to vote on something else. Obviously, they did that, you know, economic understanding completely wrong. But we can theoretically fix that group right there. In fact, I think we have to fix that if we want to have power again anytime soon, assuming, you know, America's voters look similar.
Well, I fear that the knee-jerk, uninformed, vote them all out nonsense is pushing us to a place where we're just going to oscillate, right? The winner of every national election is going to be whoever isn't in power. And I guess that's good half the time,
yeah.
right? And I certainly agree that it's going to take a lot to shake people out of that.
Yeah. So we've been turning the system on and off again, and that's been a trend since Obama stepped down.
Right. Since we've had a super charismatic guy. Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Okay. So here's the details of the plan as I see it. When I say truth about economic populism, I don't mean like explain economics to people in campaign ads. Now, I'm an econ nerd, so my first instinct is to do that, to start yelling like, have you not read Thomas fucking Piketty? Capital in the 21st Century clearly explains the rate of return on capital is clearly greater than the rate of economic growth. So clearly unfettered capitalism is in fact wealth redistribution and inevitably leads to increasing inequality. So we have to redistribute. But okay, everyone's already bored with my nerd yelling at this point, and they stopped listening. And apparently, pointing out much simpler facts doesn't work either, which is a big problem. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, like supporting unions more than any other administration and
mm-hmm.
passing a giant COVID rescue package with an expanded child tax credit and pushing for a more progressive tax structure. None of that seemed to matter. We live in a factless universe now, like completely factless. So the trick'em component I'm talking about is just a messaging strategy of drastic oversimplification. And then we do the nerd stuff and the woke stuff after we win. Like every speech next time starts and ends with like, we steal from rich people and we give you a comically oversized check like Ed McMahon from those rich people. Like, every ad, it's just a Democrat handing a silly giant check to a union pipe fitter and driving around with truckloads of free eggs we stole from Jeff Bezos' store. I want to see Scranton Joe putting up his dukes like an old-timey boxer and just fucking up Elon Musk on the Tesla picket line. Whatever.
Man, pointing out bad stuff didn't work really well last time, so I am fine investing in big checks.
Yeah, we gotta do
I'm
something.
Right there with you, man. Let's do it.
Okay, so I want to close out the story with a genuinely positive moment that happened despite all the tragic insanity. So the other night, I was talking with Ann and Kai about the election. I have a family, by the way. It's no big deal. Yeah, so that's fiance Ann and kind of, sort of, almost official stepkid Kai.
What is kind of and sort of doing in that sentence? It's just almost official. You don't have to...
It is almost official. So this is just a weird callback to me getting made fun of for saying something similar during our live show in Vegas.
Because to people who don't know that, it feels like you're keeping Kai at as much distance as you possibly can. Okay.
Yeah, that should not be understood as what's happening. It's quite the opposite. That's kind of what the story's about a little bit. Mm-hmm. So... we're talking about our grievances with America, which were manifold, and we landed on the idea of harnessing the anger and making it productive going forward. And I mentioned in an interview I heard with Andy Kim. He's the Democrat who just won the open Senate seat in New Jersey. He was talking about meeting lots of people on the campaign trail who were disillusioned by the whole political system, which is understandable, I guess. And he said, here's what I told those people. I told him the opposite of democracy is apathy. And I think that's great. And Kai's response to that was also great. For context, Kai happens to be a trans person and fully approved this story. Kai said, approximate quote, all right, well, I'm going to channel the fear and the rage about the bigots having power, and I'm going to win at life so fucking hard. I'm going to be valedictorian of my high school. I'm going to Harvard. I'm going to beat the fuck out of obnoxious young Republicans in debates like fucking Ted Cruz Jr. or whatever. I'm going to become a senator and I'm going to fucking like outlaw cisgender bathrooms and cisgender books for spite. How about
there
that?
You go.
How about I fucking do that?
There you go.
It's great. Kai has the energy of a union electrician a lot and it's fucking delightful. It turns into like a Brooklyn accent sometimes. It's fantastic. So that's the energy though that I'm hoping we get from everyone as soon as possible, that Kai energy of like, no, I'm going to win and I'm going to take this back. Revenge in the form of seizing back the power.
I love it.
Yeah. Losing the election, obviously terrible, but you can't have sweet, sweet revenge without a loss. The revenging begins now.
There you go. Like I said on Scathing, at least we know hate is something that grows in the native soil.
I also want a message to all the people out there who were very upset at candidates because they didn't match exactly your values. Right now is the time to find your next candidate and do everything you can grassroots to organize to get him elected. Get on it.
There you go.
You fucking didn't pick this time. Pick next time.
Absolutely. I listened to Stacey Abrams' podcast recently, Assembly Required, and that was actually a big message, which I liked. It was saying like, they pointed out how like Democrats and progressive policies did way better at the state and local level than the federal level.
Right.
So part of the strategy going forward is definitely to ramp up the effort at the local level. Yep. That is, I think, very important and an excellent plan. The other thing Stacey Abrams said, which I thought was great advice to white people about being good allies, was be a spy. And I love this. Like, as a white person, you might get invited into certain spaces that others wouldn't, and then you can report back on the shitty white people and what they're saying and doing and planning. I was like, nice, all right. Stacey Abrams, advice.
For
how to
people
be a good
that
ally.
Like watch Christian movies to see what those motherfuckers are saying. I feel like we're positioned to do that, right?
Yeah.
We can talk the talk, right? Like we can go into these Christian spaces and be like, have you seen the latest David Ayer White film like me?
Espionage agents. Yeah. Absolutely.
I look like every hate group. I could get into
sure
all
do.
Of those so easily.
Oh,
I look like every cop. It's great. Yeah. It's not great, but it's good for this guy. All right, on that note, they're going to love the segues we do. So, we're going to toss it over to a quick word from our sponsor, Aura Frames. Shh. Wyatt.
Hey, Heath. What you doing there?
Oh, hey, Noah. I'm just hanging out.
Well, right, yes, but also, you have a hippo.
Oh, the hippo. Yeah. So you know how Eli loves Mudang, the baby hippo?
Yes, of course.
Right. So as an early Christmas present, I decided to surprise him and have it all set up when he gets back from the magic convention later.
You bought Mudang?
I tried, but apparently she's like super expensive now. This is Budang? Eli's tiger guy hooked me up. Said this is Mudang's cousin, actually.
Well, that seems like an obvious lie. But if you're looking to find a great gift for Eli, that's much easier and less illegal, you should check out Aura Frames.
Oh, what's Aura Frames?
It's a digital picture frame that everybody on your list is sure to enjoy.
Interesting idea. Tell me more about the Aura Frame.
Named number one by Wirecutter, Aura Frames makes it incredibly easy to share unlimited photos and videos directly from your phone to the frame. And when you give an Aura Frame as a gift, you can personalize and preload it with a thoughtful message and photos using the Aura app, making it an ideal present for long-distance loved ones. It's a gift so special, they'll use it every day. You could even put some photos of Mudang on there.
That sounds great. So, where can I get some Aura Frames?
For a limited time, visit AuraFrames.com and get $45 off Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames by using the promo code Skeptocrat at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code Skeptocrat. This exclusive Black Friday Cyber Monday deal is the best deal of the year, so don't miss out. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. Thanks, Noah.
No problem.
Okay, everybody be quiet. I think Eli just walked in. Shh.
Wait, are you still doing the hippo thing?
I lost the receipt for Mudang. So just hide like it's a surprise party.
Fine.
Shh. Breathing so loud.
I think that's Madge, actually.
Oh, yeah, Madge. Stop breathing so loud.
And we're back. Next up in headlines, in Deep Dark Recess news, I want to take a second to talk about how the Senate confirms cabinet appointments and how that one simple trick to get anyone you want in without a confirmation actually works. I'm talking about a process called recess appointments. The regular United States Senate is the group that handles all the major appointments the president picks. Donald Trump pulls a random name out of his toupee box, and I cannot be convinced it's a more rigorous process than that. And he hands that appointment off to, you know, one of the most important jobs in the country, to the Senate, to decide if that person can just be an at-large sycophant or if they actually get a title.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the idiots in the toupee box later in the show. But the process that gets them into their job is a big deal right now, for sure. Normally, the phrase one simple trick, it means whatever comes next is a ridiculous, dumb thing, like an investment plan from Eli or whatever. But
low information plan.
In the Senate, it's very literally 100 rich people doing one simple trick stuff like all the time.
Yeah. Every day.
There's a bunch of rules like
every
that.
Every day. Yeah. The Constitution says that the Senate needs to give advice and consent for certain jobs. Many of the cabinet members fall into this category. The Senate sets up a confirmation hearing and then asks a bunch of questions that the appointee then dishonestly answers or answers combatively.
Yes, yeah. Right. And it's a facade to begin with, but even a facade of accountability is clearly too much for his heinous, right?
His heinous is the best thing I've ever seen.
That's
bravo, Noah. Well done.
Thank you.
There's a loophole, like I mentioned earlier. This is called a recess appointment. Now, both the House and the Senate can call a recess. And when they do that, the president can be like, yeah, you know, I went to your office with this TPS report and you weren't there, so I just skipped your signature in the process. And then the president can appoint whoever he likes to do whatever he wants without all the sticky, can you tell the committee how you traffic prostitutes questions, right?
We're putting fascism on all the TPS reports. Did you get that memo?
But there's rules around this. Obama got sued trying to push one of his appointments through, and he lost the case to the Supreme Court. So the legislative branch has some power over this process. The Senate also has to be adjourned for 10 days minimum for this. So that means trading 10 days of horrific governance for one terrifying cabinet pick. I'm not sure what the exchange rate is for that.
Yeah, right.
Could, right?
I think the unit is called a Gates.
And, bravo.
Yeah, Obama tried the recess appointment thing because Senate Republicans spent 4 years getting paid their six-figure salary to be like, la, 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 can't hear you that whole time and blocking every appointment.
Yeah.
But the Supreme Court said the recess was too short, so it didn't count. I get the feeling the current court might not be intellectually honest if the same situation comes up for Trump this year. Huh.
It's clear precedent. Fuck you.
Well, also, I don't really like the incentives of, like, you can't do this unless Congress is more negligent precedent sets, right?
Yeah.
The other thing to remember is that the Senate, while controlled by Republicans, they probably didn't just want to roll over and let the president pat their belly, their soft, so soft white bellies. And so they don't want to just give power over to the president, the Republican leader in the Senate, John Thune. He might not dance when Trump snaps his fingers, or he might lift Trump over his head like they did at the end of Dirty Dancing. We're going to find out. We're going to find out.
Sorry, it's such a tragic but hilarious image. I will say, I'm definitely rooting for Trump to have a very similar ending to Patrick Swayze, the real person, as soon as possible.
I hope so, too.
Ghost, either or. Yeah, but if we're counting on congressional Republicans to have a spine when it comes to standing up to Trump, let's not hold our breaths, you know?
Okay, it's not a great hope, but it is a little sliver, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. All it takes is a simple majority to get the appointment anyway. The Democratic senators can filibuster going to recess, but they can't stop the appointment train. The only thing they can do is ask super embarrassing questions about Matt Gaetz's party skills, being able to guess with a single digit plus or minus accuracy how many loose roofies are in a jar.
It's a really, really depressing game he plays. Yeah. And the recess appointment lasts for 2 years. Yeah. So if we still don't control the Senate in 2026, they can just run the same play again without a real confirmation. Trump can also just name somebody the acting whatever the fuck and get some loophole mileage from that, too. And I guess that tracks. Matt Gaetz, he's not a real person with a real job, but he might play one on TV for the next 4 years.
Yep. Yeah. Another thing, too, is the president can also just recess both houses if he wants to, but that power has never been used. I feel like I'm going to be saying that previous sentence a lot over the next few years.
Yeah. And in okay, but we can't keep calling it the purge news. Among his flurry of pre-presidential idiocy declarations, low information declarations, Trump also announced the formation of a new Department of Government Efficiency to be headed by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy.
Fuck out of here.
Okay, I think this ticks us over. Let me check here, guys, real quick. Yep, I just checked. This is the worst timeline. Worst one.
It's almost, you can almost be proud of that, right? Could not be worse. Yeah.
It's the worst one.
So this new department will be tasked with radically reducing the size of the federal bureaucracy and greatly reducing the federal workforce. So to be clear, they're planning to make a whole new redundant governmental department, right? Because we already have the GAO, which will be presumably staffed with employees that will be in offices in order to reduce the size of the government and the federal workforce.
Yep.
And just to make it extra efficient, it's going to have two heads.
Okay. Doesn't it seem like you'd hear more Republicans complaining about Vivek Ramaswamy as a DEI hire? Don't they have a problem with that kind of thing?
Jesus.
Whole bunch of racists? What happened there?
I bet we're going to hear that yet. Yeah. So as you no doubt have noticed, the name Department of Government Efficiency, acronyms to DOGE.
I hate it so much.
Which is also the name of the cryptocurrency Elon Musk owns and promotes. Huh. So the very name of the goddamn agency is a conflict of interest.
It sure is. Yeah. The new made-up agency of anti-agency is named after fake money based on the full faith and credit of a picture of a dog from a meme.
Yep.
That is the GOP in a nutshell right there. It's crazy. It's like they read Orwell and Douglas Adams as an op-ed instead of realizing it's a satire.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, because, I mean, that pales in comparison to the conflict of interest of, putting funding decisions for government agencies in the hands of a guy who is currently under at least 20 investigations and lawsuits by those various agencies.
Yep.
Right? And that's not even mentioning the extent to which his fortune is built on government contracts, also determined by the agencies whose budgets and employees he's apparently going to be in control of.
Yeah, the stated plan for the fucking DOGE, I hate it so much, is to advise Donald Trump to remove approximately 300 different federal agencies, approximately 300 of which might be involved in regulating businesses owned by billionaires like Musk and Ramaswamy.
Yep.
This is This is like that canoe thought problem, but I feel like we're leaving the chicken with the entire bag of grain while the fox becomes the Secretary of Defense.
Well, it's also worth noting that Elon Musk's passion for government efficiency primarily stems from the fact that he built SpaceX's Texas launch site right next to a national wildlife refuge, and he's mad about all the environmental reviews they have to do before he's allowed to hurl shit into space. So the impetus for the effort is Elon's frustration that we keep choosing the continued viability of Earth over his desire to play space cowboy.
We're even letting him do it. He's just mad he has to do, like, paperwork in between things.
Yes, exactly. But to be honest, though, honestly, Musk actually scares me less than Ramaswamy when it comes to this shit. Because there's every reason to believe that Ramaswamy actually buys all the way into this libertarian fetish for rugged individualism. And his embrace of pro-Trump conspiracies has also shown that he's either A, far too stupid to discern plausibility, or B, morally repugnant enough to embrace known lies to advance his personal brand. I can tell you.
It's B.
I can tell you which one I think it is, but I don't know which one is more terrifying in an efficiency czar. Right?
Yeah, not clear. Bad either way.
Right. But Ramaswamy has proposed immediately eliminating the Department of Education, the whole fucking thing.
Wow.
The IRS, and you know Donald Trump's going to love this one, the FBI.
Cool.
Yeah. He's also called for a huge drop in foreign aid, as well as a 75% reduction in the federal workforce.
Okay. Just to be clear, the federal government does have a bunch of inefficiency going on, but the answer is experts with a scalpel, not billionaires with a nuke just naming the number 75 because it sounds good in an announcement. Right. Like, we're going to do 75%. Woo!
You
no, get rid of, that's nonsense.
You want to get rid of government redundancy? Why do we need multiple branches of the military? There you go. There's a fucking nuke for you. Now, the good news is that this is probably too stupid to happen on any meaningful level. Right. Like, Republicans have shown themselves to be absolute silly putty in terms of Trump, like most of Trump's demands. But laying off millions of federal employees and eliminating huge swaths of the government apparatus would be political suicide on a level they're probably not going to willingly line up for. Add to that the fact that Musk, Ramaswamy and Trump give you a three body problem when it comes to egos. So there's also a high probability that they're just going to tear themselves to pieces internally before they can so much as release a report.
I just wish one of them would befriend and then anger Kendrick Lamar so we could get a proper diss track out of this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love it. So all that being said, the stated goals of this Department of Government Efficiency, or I guess there's no stated goals yet, but the assumed goals, they line up really nicely with a lot of the proposals in Project 2025. And to the extent that Trump will enter the White House with a mandate, it will be the mandate of libertarian Joe Rogan douche bros clinging to bootstrap solutions so they don't have to confront the enormity of their own privilege. And to the extent that their goals align with the Christian right, there is a very real possibility of action. So, what I'm saying is I don't think we can stop him, but we can change the part that Heath hates the most. We can give him a better name. So, since you guys like acronyms so much, I came up with this one. How about Commission for Letting Egomaniacal Pricks Totally Obliterate Commonly Retained Areas of Civil Importance, or Kleptocracy.
Kleptocracy.
That is a masterstroke, my friend. Bravo. Well done.
Mwah!
Thank you. And with the sad admission that I spent all of Saturday morning working on that acronym, it's like a whole morning gone. We're going to pause for a word from this week's other sponsor, Trust and Will.
Hey, Cecil, why so blue?
I don't know, Heath. I guess I'm just a little bummed about my impending death with this incoming administration.
Come on. It's not going to be that bad, Cecil.
RFK Jr. is going to be in charge of our health, man.
Oh, yeah, I mean, sure, yeah. We're going to die. Definitely. I get it. But Trust and Will makes it easy to get our affairs in order beforehand.
What's Trust and Will?
Trust and Will takes all the hassle out of estate planning and makes creating your will or trust easy. Their website is so easy to use, even Noah could navigate it.
It's true. I use Trust and Will to help secure my loved ones, and I'm a guy who flew into an apoplectic rage trying to figure out how to level up his character in D&D Beyond, so.
Mm-hmm. Keep your family prepared and protected by managing your will or trust online. Each will or trust is state-specific, legally valid, and customized to your needs. Like, for example, who's going to take care of Gary when you're gone?
Gary's a mannequin.
That Tom will be alone with when you're gone. You don't think he's going to need a legal guardian?
Okay, all right. Good point.
Yeah. Well, their simple step-by-step process guides you from start to finish, one question at a time. And live customer support is available through phone, chat, or email. Plus, Trust and Will has an overall rating of excellent and thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot.
All right, Heath, I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Let Trust and Will uncomplicate the process for you. Protect what matters most in minutes at trustandwill.com/skeptocrat and get 10% off plus free shipping. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/skeptocrat.
Thanks, Heath. I feel a lot better.
Hey, did you guys see that RFK Jr. is going to mandate K-12 pox parties?
Didn't last, though.
Never does, man.
And we're back. Next up in headlines, in the cabinet of Dr. Caligari news, we have some early announcements about who's going to be running the country along with Donald Trump as part of his cabinet. And I think we can all agree that a 1920 silent horror film from Germany would represent a better time in political history. Trump could die tomorrow, and we definitely have the worst American government ever assembled in my lifetime.
You're not wrong.
Especially since the rest of the open slots would get filled by a guy who tried to order donuts and missed somehow. And that's assuming those slots, like labor, housing, transportation, education, represent departments that continue existing. Mm-hmm. We'll see. That being said, certain areas like governmental efficiency, the guh of Doge, are going to be covered by Trump inventing some new czar positions whenever he's able to think of some words and smush them together into a job. For example, Mike Huckabee is going to be the ambassador to Israel, but that title might become Minister of God, Guns, Grits, and Gravy or something like that. Fun fact, that's also the title of his literal book that he wrote, Mike Huckabee.
Yeah. No, it's easy to have missed that one amid all the other terrifying appointments, but Trump wants to put a millennialist, a person who believes that God cannot return to bring final glory until a great war that starts in Israel engulfs the whole planet, an ambassador to Israel now.
Yeah, this and the Kristi Noem appointment really exposed this administration's war on dogs. You know what I mean?
And red heifers. We're going to have a whole bunch of weird fucking red cow policies from Huckabee because he's a psychopath. Yeah. So the appointments so far, they were actually pretty convenient. It turns out that everyone who got named for a position, they were already kneeling right near Trump's toadstool-shaped penis for the last 8 years. So he got a lot done in just the one quick meeting, I'm guessing. So let's talk about some of the latest picks. I'll start with our soon-to-be Secretary of State. That would be Marco Rubio.
Oh, God.
And bad news, he's the good news portion of the story here.
Right?
Yeah.
Which seems crazy, considering Marco Rubio is a badly constructed robot, very clearly. He's like ChatGPT using the tech of a Teddy Ruxpin. That's what he seems like to me. He's not going to be able to get past the CAPTCHA for his government email account. He's going to be our top diplomat. Hopefully he won't have to speak for 10 straight minutes about, I don't know, anything regarding the entire world, because the last time that happened, his normal human fluids ran low and his cyborg mouth started to seize up and he had to grope around out of the frame in a fucking panic and then make hard eye contact with the camera while he took a sip from the silliest tiny little bottle in his dollhouse that he had right outside of the frame.
So amazing.
Yeah, no, it is truly fucking sad that the climate change denialist Tea Party protectionist is the one they're holding up as a rational choice. That's the one they're going like, no, look, it's not all that bad. This guy's going to be Secretary of State. That's how far we've fallen.
Oh, God, it's so true. It's like the main character from A Bronx Tale became a senator and then suddenly became more racist somehow.
Okay, more racist Calodrio. That's accurate and rough. Okay, next up, we have Trump's pick for Secretary of Defense.
Jesus Christ.
That would be Pete Hegseth. He's an Army veteran who wrote a book about how diversity in the U.S. military is making us lose at all the wars we're in. Not clear which ones he's talking about. Maybe Eurasia, I guess. That one's ongoing. The most recent item on his resume is being a host on Fox and Friends weekend. Weekend. I love it. He's not qualified for the serious journalism of the Fox and Friends main show, but he could do the Weekend. And he is getting a job as the head of our entire Defense Department now. More importantly, he looks like Max Headroom became a weatherman. And he's like in a snit about the jet stream all the time.
He does. Yeah. There was some buzz that they were rethinking this one since there are very credible allegations of sexual assault that came to light after they announced this. But then Trump was like, no, we're not. Because like we're not reconsidering me. So that is obviously not disqualifying.
Yeah. He looks like someone animated every failing HR workplace compliance exam.
He's like a mosaic of all that shit.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Okay, for Attorney General.
Oh, do we have to?
The head of the Justice Department, Trump named Matthew Gaetz. Among his many responsibilities, he'll be in charge of investigating himself for sex trafficking.
Yep. Oh.
So we'll see how that goes. In case anyone missed it, a 3-year DOJ investigation into Gaetz and his best friend Joel Greenberg led to Greenberg getting 11 years in prison and, during that investigation, naming Gaetz as being involved in many of his crimes. So they might not be besties anymore.
Wow.
The House Ethics Committee also did their own investigation, which included a woman testifying that Gaetz had sex with her when she was in high school at age 17. He was not a classmate, by the way. He was like 37 at the time.
Jesus Christ.
Oof. Other allegations include attending drug-addled fuck parties, which, okay, that sounds great, except they also had underage girls involved. Mm-hmm. Those claims about Gaetz are supported by multiple witnesses and also phone location data, as I understand it. And this all got extra renewed attention when Gaetz was announced by Trump. And then Gaetz immediately resigned from Congress and the probe officially ended because they don't technically have any power outside of sitting members. And if you're wondering how the fuck Donald Trump landed on that guy being in charge of the entire Justice Department, it's because all the other candidates kept talking about justice bullshit and legal bullshit. According to a Trump advisor, quote, the president-elect didn't like the other contenders because they talked about their vaunted legal theories and constitutional bullshit.
Holy shit.
Gaetz was the only one who said, yeah, I'll go over there and start cutting fucking heads. Whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, well, it's also worth noting that his first two picks were like, I don't want to be his fucking attorney general. I saw how that worked out for Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr.
Right.
But yeah, but keep in mind, like, look, he's looking for somebody. This is a guy for whom Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr were too ethical.
What the fuck?
Right? So, like, there's not a lot of scum left in the barrel when you scrape past Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr.
True. Holy shit. I feel like the first thing Jim Jordan does in the next congressional session is the Chris Hansen ethics hearing.
Jesus.
I think that's the next thing. That have a seat, Chris.
Yeah. And just one other thing, apropos of nothing, the Combating Human Trafficking in Commercial Vehicles Act of 2017. Is an anti-human trafficking law that got exactly one vote against it in the House before it passed.
Wow.
I will give you two guesses who that one vote was. Hint, he does look like a Funko Pop shat himself and he's mad about it.
He does.
I feel like their feigned obsession with grooming and child trafficking was just part of an effort to set some kind of hypocrisy high score. Yeah.
The machine just says tilt now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Doesn't he look like Megamind had a brainectomy and they kept the loose skin?
Way too accurate. All right.
A low information ectomy.
Next up, we have our incoming Director of National Intelligence.
I want off the ride.
Yeah, me too, man.
Me off the ride.
That would be Tulsi Gabbard.
Oh, no, that's so
Tulsi Gabbard. She ran for president as a Democrat 4 goddamn years ago. And then she dropped out of the primary almost immediately with pretty much no support. And since then, she conveniently found her way into the Republican Party.
Weird.
During that time, her vote on Donald Trump's 2019 impeachment was present. She voted, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
She also turned into an outspoken supporter of Vladimir Putin and the invasion of Ukraine. And of course, she murdered all those Dalmatians. Many people are saying she's very clearly a Russian asset now, who's about to be in charge of national intelligence. That being said, I am one of those people now. I'm saying that about Tulsi Gabbard. I don't have any direct evidence that she's definitely a Russian spy, but intelligence leaders all over Europe have already said to America, hey, you're fucking stupid, and we're not going to be sharing intelligence with a very obvious Bond villain and Disney villain? Like, how did you even find that combination? What the fuck are you doing over there?
Tulsi Gabbard is exactly one level above nominating Vladimir Putin on Kim Jong-un's shoulders in a raincoat.
This is going to be easier when the Department of Government Efficiency repurposes the budgets on background checks and just relies on approving nominees through Twitter polls.
Right, there you go. Or you could just buy the blue check mark.
And then you're fine. Yeah. You're fine now. That's our background check.
God, all I can do is laugh. It's sad.
That's not all I can do, Heath.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, I've had some other emotions too. I'm just doing this. This is a defense mechanism at this point.
I've been able to mix the laughing and crying quite well, actually. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I've had quite a craft here and there myself, Cecil.
I'm a podcaster. I'm good at mixing, so I know what to do. Yeah.
All right. Well, get ready to craft a little bit more. That brings us to the person who's going to be in charge of health in this country, mm-hmm. Health and Human Services. That would be Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You might remember him from being a rabid anti-vaxxer lunatic, or from killing a bear with his car during a moment of drunken falconry driving.
Okay.
And then eating a very expensive steak at Peter Luger's, then dumping the bear corpse in Central Park, and then trying to frame a bike rider as a cheeky prank.
Mm-hmm.
No idea. Or in terms of health stuff, you might remember him for having a worm removed from his brain this year. He is also the guy who sawed off the head of a dead whale with a chainsaw. He is the whale chainsaw guy. I can't get over this. If your taboo card includes whale and chainsaw, you can't be in charge of anything. That's insane. Yeah. You can't have anything. Well, he's going to be in charge of public health.
Yep.
And his first announcement was telling the National Institutes of Health that we're taking a timeout on, you know, boutique health issues like deadly worldwide pandemics. That's a timeout on that.
His Robert F. Kennedy Sr. would have been a better choice. So I guess as long as you don't use health, you should be fine for the next 4 years, right?
Yep. Well, apparently elections have consequences. I never could have seen this coming. So maybe try out voting correctly next time if you get a chance. If you don't mind, just like maybe vote
just
correctly.
Just do that instead. Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been a long time. But the recording device that we implanted long ago in Sarah Huckabee Sanders' leathery carapace has not been shed yet. So we got some exclusive audio of the Trump team forming the cabinet. Let's roll that tape.
Okay, what about Department of Interior?
What about Sherwin Williams? Is that guy available?
No, I checked. Turns out that's just the name of the store.
Oh, deceptive. Put them on the list.
Bingo, got it.
Mr. Trump?
That's soon to be Mr. President Trump to you, TIE Fighter. How you doing, big guy? How you feeling, huh?
I'm okay, sir. I wanted to talk to you about some of these appointments.
Pretty great, right? Did you see the Doge one? That's apparently an internet thing.
Yeah,
Doge.
Yeah, sir. I saw. I'm not sure Elon Musk should be heading up any efficiency for anything ever.
What are you talking about? Have you met this guy? He's great.
Yeah, no, I've met him.
And?
He asked me if I'd seen Borat, and then he did 20 minutes of quotes from Borat.
Borat, right? Hilarious. Love that movie.
We both love that movie.
My wife.
You do, yeah. No, it's just a bunch of these appointments are Matt Gaetz, RFK Jr. They seem really ill-advised, and like they're going to mark the entire beginning of your presidency with what a poor decision maker you are and how much everybody with any expertise hates you.
I mean, that was going to happen regardless, wasn't it, T-Dub?
Well, you got a point there.
Exactly. Now, what about Department of Wildlife?
Hear me out. A literal forest fire.
Ooh, good one, I'll ask.
Yeah, that's not your worst choice so far, I guess.
They're available.
And in states of denial news, Things look bleak for the American people, but one group of good guy oligarchs. Why did I just put those words together? anyway, a group of governors, two governors, in fact, they're going to lead a new group called the Governors Safeguarding Democracy.
The relatively higher information oligarchs. Yeah. Safeguarding Democracy.
One of the spokespeople is Governor J.B. Pritzker, billionaire and current governor of Illinois. The other is Jared Polis, the governor of Colorado. Their plan is to coordinate efforts between states to try to mitigate some of the damage Donald Trump can do as president in his next term.
Cool. We've got a clumsy idiot juggling live grenades on his way back into the White House. And now the opposition party had to make the Commission for Grenade Juggling Safety. Like, I'm glad they're doing it, but sentences are crazy now.
They're getting crazier, too.
It's hard. Yeah, no, look, we're going through democracy and putting little plastic caps in the outlets and locks on the cabinets. That's where we are now.
We have the childproof democracy because of the low information voters. Governor Pritzker, here's a quote from him. He says, quote, Donald Trump is going to bring people into his administration who are absolute loyalists to his cult of personality and not necessarily to the law. Mm-hmm. Last time, he didn't really know where the levers of government were. I think he probably does now. So I think that the threat remains great, end quote.
Okay, it's like having a stupid little kid in the podcast studio, except our podcast runs the entire country in this case. Like, who let the fucking kid back in the booth? He's touching the mixer again. He's moving all the sliders on the mixer.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Now, this group of two governors didn't just get into the weeds about the details on what the group's going to do. The broad strokes are that this group's going to coordinate efforts and resources between states to protect things like elections and other laws from federal government overreach. They seem to have the right mindset, too. Governor Polis said he didn't believe that the states would lose their autonomy overnight, but instead it would be a steady erosion of power of statehood.
Yeah.
Well, except for the state power of forcing people to give birth. That power is locked in.
Yeah. Locked in. Yeah. No, I'm sure the party that's been hiding their bigotry behind the sanctity of states' rights for the last half century plus, they'll be consistent on this, I'm sure.
This effort is actually modeled after another group of governors called the Reproductive Freedom Alliance. This is a group of 21 governors that came together after the Dobbs decision to help coordinate efforts to keep reproductive freedom across all those states. Pritzker added this about the governors safeguarding democracy. Quote, what we're doing is pushing back against the increasing threats of autocracy and fortifying the institutions of democracy that our country and our states depend on, end quote.
Yeah, so the only possible good that could come from Trump's second term would be a concerted effort to dial back the powers of the presidency.
Right, yeah, right, yeah. Republicans love to talk about things like states' rights, but they really only care about states' rights when it can't be overpowered by the executive branch. This happens all the time. People complain the Republicans aren't consistent, but they really are. They just want power, and they want no one else to have any power at all. So if that means they have to overstep on states' rights or advocate to the states' executive or legislative power when it serves them, they're just going to do that.
Yeah. The fascism of Project 2025, also known as the GOP platform, it sounds hypocritical after all the GOP rhetoric about states' rights this whole time. But here's the thing. There's actually a secret Federalist Paper number 86. It says, or not, whatever's convenient. That's like the whole thing. It's the whole thing on number 86.
It's very important. That one, yeah. So, no, look, we're at a point now where I miss them having evil principles because at least those were principles.
Yeah.
I think a coalition of states bracing for impact is actually a good thing. And as much as I kind of hate the idea of states most of the time, I can see things like states' rights. They might be great barriers to a Trump America. Mm-hmm. And if a billionaire has to fight another billionaire to get me to keep some of my rights, then I guess our political system is basically the sequel to Pitch Black, where a movie where evil squares off against evil. Ethical billionaires don't exist, and that includes you, JB. So
yeah, I mean, I'll give you a week. If you become a billionaire, you get a week to figure out the right thing to do before we eat you. Like, I know it's hard to become a millionaire, but you'll figure it out. Oh, or you won't. I'm good either way.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do.
Yeah. No, I bet J.B. Pritzker would taste like a funnel cake. Yeah.
Funnel cake. A funnel cake corn dog. Yeah, I think that.
Right. Yeah. Somewhere in between, depending on whether you put powdered sugar on them. Yeah.
And you do.
I also want to let people know that there are a lot of other groups that are revving up for another crazy 4 years. Groups like American Atheists are going to be taking the government to court when they see religion seep into our laws in public places. The ACLU and the Southern Poverty Law Center, they're planning on taking the government to court when the federal branch decides to impinge on our rights. And people like Planned Parenthood and other abortion access charities are going to be making sure that women, even in states that currently ban it, can get travel costs and abortion care in other states where it's allowed.
Until they find a way to outlaw that, yeah.
They're going to do that probably, yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, if the ACLU is looking for attorneys, pretty much the entire DOJ just retired while making a gag noise.
Yeah.
So, you know, check it out. There's some lawyers there.
If you need to know how to spell that noise, too, I've got you covered.
Don't go after Merrick Garland, though. Let him retire. Let Merrick Garland retire. This is the time for people to join together and be stronger as a unit than they are as individuals. Sure, I'm mad at a lot of the electorate that either participated or didn't participate, but one thing is clear. We can't win if we don't work together. And a second Donald Trump term can shake our democracy to its very core. It's up to us to hold each other and to support it against the slings and arrows of outrageous misfortune.
And outrageous it is, yeah.
I'd also like to add, you're hearing us talk about, you know, strategies going forward, and we don't exactly agree on everything, but that's fine. We're just all on the good team, and we have the same shared goal.
Right.
So everybody keep that in mind.
Yeah.
You know, talk it through, but don't be weird about it.
Yeah, right. There's been a lot of people trying to draw you into that circular firing line ever since the election.
Yep.
Yeah. Try to stay out.
Not helpful.
It.
Don't do that.
And finally tonight, in onions peeling back for a change news. As our headlines to this point confirm, it has been a rough couple of weeks. Like the period between the last Skeptocrat and this one is probably the shittiest episode interstitial period in the history of this show. But there was one piece of news so glorious and pure that it temporarily outshined everything else we've talked about today. And that nugget of unadulterated positivity was, of course, the news that the bid to own every goddamn thing Alex Jones ever held dear was won by the internet's favorite satirical news site, The Onion.
Oh, it's so fucking good. I'm still genuinely not sure if the whole story is somehow a headline from The Onion,
right?
And they got every
be.
Other news source to do it too,
could
but
be.
It's not. It's real.
Yeah. Also, I just want to point this out. Fox News is reporting on this, and they read The Onion's byline that they have 4.3 trillion daily readers, and I'm not actually sure that the person reading it knows it's part of the bit.
Absolutely, that person has no fucking idea it's a bit. I watched the video Cecil put up for us. That person also has no idea, you know, how many people there are within like three orders.
Didn't even get close. Oh my God, that is so funny. I hadn't heard that until you put this
amazing
clip in, and I thought I was gonna fucking die. Now, this is a tough story to talk about on the show, mostly because The Onion beat us to all the best punchlines. But the other reason is that some of the details are a little bit hazy still at this point. So, as you'll recall, Alex Jones was recently ordered to pay in excess of $1 billion to the families of the victims of the Sandy Hook massacre, who themselves were victimized by Jones's conspiracy-mongering bullshit. And since he doesn't have $1 billion+, he was ordered to sell everything he does have, except his blood and his organs, to pay as much of that as he could. And among the things he was ordered to sell was his business, InfoWars. I'm sorry, I didn't get that name pompous enough, did I? It's Free Speech Systems LLC, which is the parent company of InfoWars.
Yeah, it's part of the Am I Being Detained Consortium, actually. It's really tricky to unravel a bunch of multinationals there.
I wonder how they valued those truckloads of Don't Tread on Me shirts, though.
Yeah, no,
you know, how do you
value questions, yeah.
How does the assessor walk through there and be like, yeah, no, that's worth money.
Yeah.
Like, what?
So last month, the guy overseeing the liquidation announced that there was going to be two auctions of Jones's assets. The first was for what people were calling his intellectual assets with a straight face. The second,
his low information.
Yeah. The second was for the physical assets of the company, like the boner pills, automated butt plugs, and spittle-coated desk and whatnot. Now, a lot of people, including Alex Jones, seemed pretty confident that a group of Jones's supporters were going to buy the company and then hire him to run it. And apparently, just such a group did put together a bid. An embarrassingly low bid of $3.5 million, but a bid nonetheless. But apparently, The Onion's bid was actually lower, and somehow still they won the auction, leading Jones's lawyers to cry foul and even the judge overseeing the bankruptcy to raise an eyebrow.
Okay, in fairness to that trustee, When Alex Jones was running the company, he made approximately, what was it, like negative $1 billion?
$1.4 billion, yeah.
So taking a bid like, you know, $2.5 million instead of $3.5 million, that's a big improvement on Alex Jones's number.
Really? Yeah.
Taking a bid of one body joke would be a big improvement.
Also, guys, what kind of fucking loser do you have to be to give Alex Jones all his broken chairs and green screens back for $3.5
right?
million? Dollars?
Right? Now, so according to the trustee making the decisions, despite the bid, the Onion's bid being lower, it actually represented the better deal for Jones's creditors because the Sandy Hook victims' families, who represent the lion's share of the claims against him, have agreed to take a much smaller payout, but only if the assets go to the Onion. In other words, when Alex Jones looked all the way to the end of the rope that he was hanging from, he saw the very families he'd been torturing this whole time holding it. Which is the kind of poetic justice that reality very rarely offers.
Yes. And Knowledge Fight might get the death.
It's looking that way, yes.
Or maybe Tom and Cecil if that doesn't work out. I am ready to help with a very sexual bid that
I have a body joke. I've got a body joke.
We actually had Knowledge Fight on our show a few weeks ago, and we offered to hold it for him, but clearly that is their fucking desk. They
yeah.
earned it having to listen to that drum full of gravel scream about gay frogs every day, yeah, man.
Absolutely. Now, before we pop the cork, I should note that there's at least a chance that this deal will be nullified. The judge overseeing the case seemed skeptical, if not downright hostile, to the deal in a hearing about it the day that it was announced. I would expect we're going to learn more about this the day that this episode airs, but there will certainly be some legal wrangling to come before it's finalized. But it seems like the most likely outcome is that Jones actually will get shit canned from his own company, which will then be used to humorously emphasize what a dangerous asshole he's been this whole time for the rest of its existence. And that is exactly the kind of news we all needed to keep us on this side of the bridge this week. So
I feel like another fair agreement would be that Jones can keep whatever he can swallow and pass like a drug. That would be fine.
Hey, Onion, if you're listening, yeah,
Tim Onion,
fucking Dan and Jordan are like, no, actually, he can keep the desk now. We're fine
yeah,
with that.
No, it's we don't want it.
All right. On that note, we're gonna close it out. Thanks to Noah, thanks to Cecil, and thanks to all the listeners who liked us and followed us on all the various internets. Please keep doing that. Please keep listening, and please keep telling your friends. And just a quick announcement, we'll be off for the week of Thanksgiving this year, and then we'll be back with more delightful discussion of current events and the tragic human frailty that goes along with it on December 16th. And if you find the naive stupidity of our giving away a free show business model to be oddly charming, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat. Just like all the new generous donors, you will be complimented by name next time around. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, if you enjoyed our brand of whimsy and you'd like to hear more dick jokes free of charge, check out our brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D-, and Citation Needed, available in all the podcast places. We just have one last thing. Let's compliment that pianist. Special thanks to Ryan Slotnick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He's the creator of the virtuosic musical stylings you heard today, which were used with permission. You should definitely check him out using the links we provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off. God damn it.
Cecil, did you bring your hippo noises?
I will do my best. I don't really know what a hippo sounds like, but I'm going to do my best.
I'm so excited to find out. I wrote this thing and I was like, I went on YouTube and listened to hippo noises. It's like, I could do it. And I was like, no. Cecil is going to be so much goddamn better than me.
It's going to sound like the Predator, I think, is what I'm going to do. I think that's what I'm going to do.
Love it. That is what Madge sounds like with the jowls.
That's what... I think that I also think that's
it
what
is.
Mudang
it is
sounds
actually
like
it's really fucking good.
You, so.
I never realized that Mudang sounded like the fucking Predator, but she
it's,
does.
Yeah. It's the Predator with a CPAP machine, which is a great image. Oh, what's Aura Frames?
I'm sorry.
So good.
Cecil's fucking killing me.
So
I'm just
good.
Doing it once in a while, just dropping it in.
I'm
once
so
in a while, you know. I just want to make sure you have enough tape. Heath, when you cut this, I want to make sure there's plenty of tape.
Cecil, seriously, I almost wrote at the top, like, and Cecil, just like improvise
yeah,
what Mudang would
yeah,
do.
Yeah, throughout, like, just like,
but
like every once in a while.
You're nine steps ahead of
me. Yep.
You bet.
Oh, guys, if Eli was on this episode, Budang would be a character now and would have a voice and everything. It's actually, sometimes it's good
that's
that he
takes a... That's what's going to happen now, though.
Yeah.
Eli's standing right behind all of us somehow.
He's superpositioned behind each of us right now.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle in a Thunderstorm, LLC, copyright 2024, all rights reserved.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.